I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the ways that art, race, and space intersect. We'll talk about the tensions involved in depicting America's troubled racial history and the ways in which art can help us understand and confront that history. We will talk about all of this with a great group of guests. IUPUI Professor of History and Museum Studies, Madhupe Labode, Molly Jeffers of the Madam Walker Theater, and urban designer Will Marquez. Please join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the Art, Race, and Space Symposium at IUPUI and around Indianapolis. We're fortunate to have a great group of guests today, and we'd like to have you join them by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can shoot us a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'd like to welcome to the program now Dr. Madhupe Labode, who is Assistant Professor of History and Museum Studies at IUPUI. Madhupe, welcome
Hello,
to the program. It's
Hello.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks. Molly Jeffers, who is with the Madam Walker Theater. Molly, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you. And Will Marquez, who is an urban designer. Will, welcome to the program.
Thanks. In this week of celebrating Dr. King's birthday, it's great to be here with everybody.
It is good. It is good. I want to start first by just talking about what the Art, Race, and Space Symposium is. And this is your chance, obviously, to plug the event and to make people aware of what's going on so that they can come. And then I want to open the conversation up so we can talk about the ways that art and race intersect, particularly how we make use of public space in dealing with art and our racial heritage and history. And I'll start with Madhupe on that one.
Well, thank you. The Art, Race, and Space Symposium will take place tomorrow, Friday, January 25th, at the IUPUI Campus Center. And this symposium is being sponsored by the IUPUI Arts and Humanities Institute, as well as the Museum Studies Program. And it was inspired by a really remarkable series of events that occurred in Indianapolis. Many of the listeners may be kind of vaguely aware of this. In 2007, the Indianapolis Cultural Trail commissioned a well-known black artist, Fred Wilson, to produce a piece of public art for the Indianapolis Cultural Trail. Mm-hmm. The art that he proposed, it's never been fabricated, was based on the figure of a freedman at the base of the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial in central Indianapolis. There was eventually a protest movement grew up about this. The meanings of the freedmen were widely debated, and the Central Indiana Community Foundation and the Cultural Trail took the really unusual move of acting on the basis of that protest and canceled the Fred Wilson's commission in 2011. And because IUPUI is a university where we think about ideas, we were really struck by the type of the comments that rose from various community members, as well as the artist himself and people around the country, about what this event, this very remarkable series of events, actually means as far as public art, as far as public space, and what race means. And race meaning not just African-American white, but the experience of being an individual of race in mm-hmm. India, in the United States. And so we've decided to hold a symposium that will include not only Fred Wilson, the artist, but people who were involved very closely with this, Mindy Taylor Ross, who was the curator of the public art, Amos Brown, who is actually speaking right now on his own show, mm-hmm. Will be talking about various community voices. But also we're gathering, because we think context is important as well as individuals' experience. Various peoples, such as Richard Pierce, who's written about African Americans in Indianapolis, Renee Atter, who's written about African Americans and memorials, to come together and engage in what we're hoping to be a widespread but also deep conversation amongst the panelists and the audience, and also amongst the audience members themselves.
Yeah, and I do not want to have... force you to carry the entire load for the program. I do want to get Molly and Will into the discussion, but I think in the interest of our listeners here, what were the concerns about the sculpture? Where did the pushback come from, Madupe?
What I can do best is maybe just explain what the E Pluribus Unum is, and then other people can chime in. Fred Wilson's E Pluribus Unum was to reposition the figure of the freedman who is part of the peace group on the west side of the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial. He's widely taken to represent a freed person. There are chains dangling from his fist. He is looking up at the Goddess of Liberty. And Fred Wilson's idea was to reposition that man, take him out, kind of very much duplicate him, but reposition him, put him in front of the city and county building, have him in kind of an ambiguous stance as if he might be rising, but also holding a flag representing the African diaspora. So that was the, if you can envision that, that was what Fred Wilson proposed, and he called it E Pluribus Unum, which is out of many, one.
And how active, Molly Jeffers, how active were you in that whole discussion or dispute?
I wasn't formally, I guess, involved in the project. I think just because I was around and a voice of, the urban young professional, I tried to help facilitate the discussion and just to get people involved in the process and what was going on and trying to, I guess, figure out why there were complaints. You asked what was the problem? What were the complaints? And I keep thinking about this word empower. I remember a lot of people kept saying, how is this piece supposed to empower the African American community? And I think there were some language issues that were put forth that tried to tell the public like what this project was supposed to do. And I heard a lot from the African American community. How can you tell us how we should feel about this? What does it mean to empower us? How does this image do that? And different discussions like that. So I was just kind of around for facilitating that and offering feedback.
So the feedback or the objections primarily were that it to use the term empower, or that the figure was not ennobling in some fashion. I mean, is that as a designer, Will Marquez, is that one of your obligations or is that one of your charges?
I think we always try to approach these projects, especially ourselves, when we work in public space, when we work with communities, we try not to think along racial, sort of elements. I mean, when you approach a project, you try to think that you've already maybe figured those things out. Of course, you wait for something like this to happen, and you always wonder then, what do we do next? now that this has taken place. Of course, the design, I think, was just the wrong. The artist didn't measure the right temperature, and I think that
temperature. You mean in terms of the community, or
in terms of what the community was expecting? When I work with community members, I can for sure say that while there is always a nostalgic sort of postmodern approach to wanting, design, that it's also the temperature I'm feeling is that it's, something different, that the feeling was that it needed to be something that wasn't that.
I'd just like to add on to that is that one of the things that Fred Wilson called attention to, I think, with this piece was the right lines of race that actually go through the Soldiers and Sailors Monument. And many people are used to thinking of that as a neutral monument. Mm-hmm. But of course, as he was saying, that the only figure of a black person on that monument is someone who is actually shown as a former slave. And Fred Wilson also called attention to the fact that the monument also commemorates killing Native Americans, because mm-hmm. the War of 1812 is referred to as the, you know, the war against the Indians on the mm-hmm. monument. So what he's calling attention to, I think, which was many was uncomfortable to many people, was how race and perhaps white supremacy underpins some of the issues of which, you know, that are based on the our monumental culture. Indianapolis is very proud of its monumental culture. And many people wanted, and I don't want to put words in people's mouths because there were so many mm-hmm. really important and nuanced critiques, but there was concern about what is the purpose of public art? Should it be ennobling, or should it be something that is relentlessly provocating? Mm-hmm. What was the level of consultation mm-hmm. with community members when this was put up? There were concerns that the that were widely expressed about the use of space, that because the figure would be in front of the city and county building, where many mm-hmm. African Americans go through judicial proceedings, mm-hmm. they said, what does this ambiguous kind of representation mean in such a prominent space? So I think in some ways the ambiguity, which often is part of art, often clashed with temperaments that often are wanting to have a more monumental, kind of straightforward message. And at least that's my interpretation.
We are talking about art, race, and public space here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, it seems to me there's a lot that we could be talking about here, and not the least, I'm actually, just because I've been listening to you and I'm fascinated by this, some of it, we've got the whole issue of obviously how we deal with race, how we depict it, and the fact that it is still a fault line in American culture. It opens deep divisions. But I think before I get to that, and I do want to get to that in this discussion, we've also just got this whole thing about what public art and public space should be, because it seems to me one of the issues that I hear people saying is, you know, gosh, this proposed piece would have made us think. It would have provoked a reaction, and we tend to think of, and I'll be honest, I drive by the monuments, and I really don't think much about what they mean at all any day. They're background. They don't provoke a reaction now. This likely would have. Will Marquez, how much of that is in play here, of just what we expect from art and what we consider?
You know, I think the important place to start is that, you know, we've been interrogating the flower for a long time over the last year, and I think what we really need to get to is how do we interrogate the dirt? Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, you know, when we talk about place politics, the street is an important place to start because it's the most public. I think people recognize it in terms of where their home is. They value it in a whole different way. So in a global world where people are trying to, I think, identify with where their home is, mm-hmm. The idea of public space is becoming very contentious. Mm-hmm. And I think something that as a growing city, as an emerging city, we need to do a better job at sort of framing the discussion of how we engage different communities as we move past, you know, hate to say homogeny, but, you know, mm-hmm. move past that into something multiracial, diverse and global. That little space at that corner might cause a riot, which, you know, might have seemed to
but
be the issue.
That has to some degree been art's function too. I mean, people rioted over
that's true, but
Stravinsky's Rites of Spring, for
but
example.
Remember the way that most of our communities understand a museum space, which is a private space, it's controlled in a lot of different ways. So the messages of what they want to say and the freedoms behind that are also they go along with what the idea of private is. It's a private institution. Well, the public institution is different. It has to be digestible by a lot of other people. And when you're quote unquote talking about someone's home or someone's street or an extension mm-hmm. of the street, you know, you're up against something that maybe you don't understand if you didn't do the right things or again take the right temperature or see where the needles actually is when it comes to a city like Indianapolis.
But I guess, Molly, I, Molly Jeffers, I would toss that out and just say, I mean, is that a possible realistic standard? I mean, it seems to me if we're going to get everybody to agree on something, I mean.
Well, we'll mention the please. Corner, you know, where the piece was going to be, and I think that was a largely important part of the project is where the piece was going to be. It was like across from the city county building,
right.
And that was a huge issue for a lot of people. And I remember people saying, "Well, you can do it, but just don't do it there." And so it's taking the temperature of the community and how do they feel about space and particular corners and what does it mean if you put this type of piece here and
right.
what happens across the street? What is the traffic like there? You know, that was a big topic.
We are talking about art, race, and public space here on No Limits. My guests are Dr. Madhupe Labote. I'm still working my way through the musicality of that. Molly Jeffers of the Madam Walker Theater and Will Marquez, an urban designer. You are listening to No Limits. I am John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about art, race, and public space today on No Limits. My guests are Dr. Madhupe Labote. I'm getting better with practice here, Madhupe. Molly Jeffers with the Madam Walker Theater, and Will Marquez, an urban designer. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Well, I want to talk. We've talked a little bit about the whole idea of public space and how people react to it, and I think Will has made the case that there is something about being confronted with it out there in the open that it's unavoidable. So there's that nature of just being hit with anything provocative out there. But I think part of why this whole thing was so, you know, contentious is that it did deal with, you know, what I can't remember who the historian was referred to, you know, to race and slavery as America's original sin. You know, it touched upon the one of what is still the fault line in our color, in our culture. Madhupe, could you talk a little bit about how sensitive those issues are and you know, to the degree that art has an obligation to deal with them?
Well, many times, especially those of us who are in what is called, quote-unquote, the North, have tended to think of race in fairly simple terms,
mm-hmm.
one that it's either black or white, which is not the case. There are many races. We're a very multiracial country and have been forever,
mm-hmm.
But also one in which, especially when slavery is invoked, mm-hmm. as I think this came up in the controversy, was something that actually doesn't have a lot to do with the northern cities,
mm-hmm.
like Indianapolis, and even furthermore is something that is should be actually debated in a kind of in a southern context. So I think there are many ways in which also slavery, as many of the opponents of the work kind of considered it being kind of like a potential glorification of slavery, were saying that they were really concerned that people wouldn't be able to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And Fred Wilson is interesting because this is something he deals with a great deal in his work. But I also, as a historian, I'm always quite concerned that slavery is considered to be first a black issue,
mm-hmm.
so not a national issue. Many times you hear people say, well, my folks immigrated here from Sweden in 1905. They had nothing to do with it. But slavery is how race is pretty much, slavery and genocide of Native Americans
mm-hmm.
is pretty much how race has been constituted in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
What whiteness means, what it means to be white, as well as what it means to be brown or black.
Yeah,
or
and it is color. One of those things that intrigues me when we talk about race. It is, as you say, specific to really the assumption is that it's white or black, and to my mind, having come from a newspaper background, you know, it's copy editors go crazy when they hear someone say, well, we've got weather coming in, meaning bad weather. we always have weather. You know, it's we have a storm, we have inclement weather, whatever. Everyone has race. It is, you know, that's the parallel. And I guess where I would like to go with this next, though, is that to some degree, how much of this, the objections are, as I understand it, is that, you know, slavery wasn't necessarily a northern issue, although even that you can make an argument.
Yes.
It was a national problem, and, you know, it was one of the issues involved in what's still the bloodiest civil war in human history. So what kind of responsibility do we have to deal with that history, and does art have to deal with it?
Here's what I always say, John. Mm-hmm. The city lives in no better place than in the future. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think when we look at...
That's a memorable phrase.
Yeah.
You want to repeat that?
Yeah, that the city lives in no better place than in the future. And when we have to, again, walk down the street and be reminded by a past that I think everybody, including myself, I mean, I'm Latino, mm-hmm. and I'm happy to be, you know, looking at this issue and saying, geez, how do we turn the page?
Mm-hmm.
Not because we don't want to remember, but I think that there's a lot of opportunities. When I was reading the notes out of the first public forum that they had at mm-hmm. Addicts the other day, you know, somebody's talked about maybe describing our community around rainbow. They described, you know, sort of new words, Tuskegee Airmen, new symbols, new ideas, mm-hmm. new ways of framing culture or class or race. I think we're a little bit exhausted in some ways by the issue of slavery. And so maybe, you know, a new spirit, a new breath could help the situation.
Yes.
And I think one of the things is of course, I'm a historian, so mm-hmm. One of the things I feel very strongly, and I think that also that Fred Wilson brought up in his artist statement, is that we haven't ever actually dealt with the past. Mm-hmm. We've simply kind of moved on. And to quote someone who was William Faulkner, who was a great man and also a bigot, said the past isn't even past. And
yeah.
I think one of the issues is that it's hard to move forward or into the future when we still haven't engaged with the meanings of the past. But I believe that just this interchange is actually one of those things that was happening all over about this work, about like how relevant should the past be to America.
We are talking about art, race, and space here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Carrie, welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Your question, please.
Well, I have a comment. I was told I could make a comment,
sure.
too. I agree with what the Latino gentleman just said. I think that given the recent history of racial oppression and the fact that, let's face it, this is terrible to say, but Indianapolis, Indiana, well, Mooresville is the home of the KKK. I think that this artist had an obligation, let me repeat that, an obligation to be super sensitive to not only the placement of this sculpture, but to the way that it depicts the subject. And I feel that we have enough of the past. I feel that we have to focus on the future as a city, embrace diversity, embrace literacy, embrace education, embrace economic opportunity, address incarceration rates, address the future of our youth, address the respect that the Tuskegee Airmen deserve, address the respect that all seniors and minorities deserve, given the limited literacy they were available to attain, and the subject should be, and the sculpture should be depicted as liberating against the oppression of the past, and depict freedom and standing, rising above injustice and oppression and racial discrimination, economic inopportunity. I mean, I would reference Rodin's sculpture, not of the thinker, which he's more popularly known for, mm-hmm. but I would reference the athlete. If anyone can Google search Rodin, R-O-D-I-N, mm-hmm. his sculpture of the athlete, it is a universal theme of freedom, Now, in my opinion, the sculpture should not have any change at all. I mean, how ironic that we should have pulled this image from the sculpture downtown in the circle and then have it in front of a place of justice where so much injustice has been done. It just makes me furious as we try to put salves on the wounds of our past. I mean, what a wasted opportunity. I mean, I'm sorry, I can't be more positive, but it's just very upsetting.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Kerry. You've given us a lot to talk about here, and I think we will do so. Thanks.
Thank you.
Certainly. Well, Madupe.
Oh, just one correction. I should have been more clear. Is when this sculpture was to be repositioned, it wasn't going to have chains.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to have a flag. But I also want to make clear is that the sculpture was not fabricated. It has not. The commission was canceled. So
okay.
It is not in place.
It's not there. Well, and I guess, Molly, I would start, you know, to some degree, it seems like we've got several themes going now in the in this discussion. One of them is to some degree that at least with this sculpture, and I guess by implication, the idea that all public art should not necessarily deal with past wrongs, at least far distant wrongs, but instead should deal with present ones, the incarceration rates and all of that sort of stuff, but at the same time somehow be uplifting. And I come back to the question I kind of posed the last one. Is that an achievable standard for artists to hit?
Well, I ask myself, does art have an obligation? I think that's a different conversation, and I don't know how I feel about that yet. But what I did think was, what I found interesting was the divide that became obvious between the generations just within the African American community, and how we saw that there was a session at the Matamoros Theater Center that Fred Wilson kind of, you know, proposed his work, and you know, folks from CICF were there, and there, you know, was a it was chaos. Like, it ended in complete chaos, and there was a like a literal and physical divide between the generations. And one side was saying, hey, we don't need to be reminded of this history, we lived it, you know, and the other side was saying, well, we're proud of our history, we want to celebrate it, we don't mind seeing it. And so it is interesting, you know, just the discussion of you know, what do we need to see now, how much of the past do we need to keep reliving, and have we talked about it enough? And I think the answer is no. I mean, clearly, like, we're having the conversation still now, and the project kind of put a mirror up to our city to show us what we haven't dealt with and what healing that hasn't taken place.
I wonder if we would, you know, art to many is still seen as very equitable, meaning that everyone can jump in on this debate, and I feel like they can make a real impact. I wonder if architecture, you know, in this city would have the same effect, if we would get so upset, like the day that to fight a building. But I don't see that ever happening. But, you know, I think that we find ourselves in an environment that needs to promise adventure, power, joy. And I don't think that that's what was happening in that situation.
But this is Madupe, and I'd like to also, one of the things which you were talking about, Will, about urban space, is that when you go through Indianapolis or probably any other major urban city, is that the space that you traverse is profoundly affected not only by race and class, for example, where the interstates went through, where urban renewal happened, but also by power. We don't necessarily see the kind of the up-and-coming kind of rough theaters in the center. We usually see them as kind of on the fringe. Literally, they're the fringe. And I think one of the things that we're hoping is that people will actually be able to see the space around them to understand how it's been formed over time, so that they can, in some ways, act in it and act on it with more efficacy. Because I think when people just think that interstates just occurred through poor areas, they don't realize that many times the interstate made those areas impoverished,
mm-hmm.
or that that
shattered neighborhoods did
right,
all sorts of things.
That IUPUI didn't just occur nowhere. It actually was built on an African American landscape that was crushed in the name of, you know, in the name so-called progress.
I'm always going to say that I think that the public is righteous in sort of arguing for these things, and I think that when you get to a symposium like the one on Friday, mm-hmm. It's going to be very interesting to sort of hear how everyone frames what I think is a very important discussion.
We are talking about art, race, and space here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I've gotten an email question from a listener named Joe who says, I think racially charged art is a great way to provoke dialogue. Living in Westfield, Indiana, many of us recognize that slavery had a huge part of our local history as part of the Underground Railroad. Many, many Hoosiers were all for freedom for slaves, but Hoosiers were certainly not very accepting of freed slaves in their towns or communities. I think that stimulating conversation, even through controversy, is essential to advancing a deeper understanding of the plight of the oppressed. I see Madupe nodding her head in affirmation here.
Well, and I just think it's interesting is that Indiana has a very complex history, which has shaped it. We had an 1851 constitution that actually tried to ban African Americans from immigrating. We restricted African Americans from serving in the militia. Mm-hmm. Now, African Americans did go ahead and serve in World War I and the Spanish-American War, but just the fact that this was part of what was considered our founding documents, I think matters just as much as the fact that women couldn't vote and that had a shape in the politics that emerged from that and the culture that emerged from that.
Well, and even the handling of the legislature basically went on vacation during the course of the Civil War because the governor was afraid that they would either vote to cut off funding to the Union troops or vote to secede.
Yes.
So there are other issues there, but I guess I also want to take the larger point here, which is that at some level art does have a duty to provoke. It's supposed to provoke some kind of reaction. Molly, I'll throw that one to you.
I guess what I like about this project or Fred's project is that what he wanted to happen, which is these conversations, we're doing, like we're having in our city,
even without the sculpture,
even without
we're
the work, you know. So I mean, what he wanted to accomplish is accomplished. You know, we're a year later, we're having these discussions, we're having a day-long symposium about the work and about what we can, you know, still resurrect in the next year. So I think art does have that obligation somewhat, and what he wanted to accomplish is even happening.
Well, Will Marquez, I'll flip this around for a bit and just say we've talked an awful lot about how, you know, when people see something in a public space, it you know, there's a different set of expectations. But we haven't asked the question, what should art in public space do? We've talked an awful lot about maybe what it shouldn't do right now. What's the positive charge on that?
You know, I always say that, and I know a lot of people have heard me say this, is that, you know, art and architecture are part of the largest representations of how we feel about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very powerful statement and something to think about because, again, I wonder, you know, when we put something like that up, how is it that we feel about ourselves? When we put buildings on that are empty of feeling or of culture, I wonder, how do we feel about ourselves? And so that's probably my best question is asking, you know, how is it that we are feeling about ourselves? And, you know, a series of sort of community conversations held by Gypsy is going to be happening over the next few months. So I'm excited to hear what is that feeling? What is the temperature?
What should we do?
What should we do? It's not for me to say.
Yeah, well, as a citizen, though, what is your
sure.
sense?
Uh, as a private citizen, you know, I'm engaged right now on a small piece of public space that is going to have some art that's part of it. And we feel that, that we have a real great responsibility, even as a small citizen, to making sure that, that they're together, that, that art and public space is something that I think everyone can have, access to.
We are talking about art, race, and space here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. My guests are Madhupe Labote, Molly Jeffers, and Will Marquez. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about art, race, and public space. My guests are Dr. Madhupe Labote. I'm getting better. Yeah, you're giving me the thumbs up here, as an assistant professor of history and museum studies at IUPUI. Molly Jeffers, who's with the Madam Walker Theater, and Will Marquez, who is the an urban designer, not the urban designer, much as you
would
like to be
that. No, urban designer.
It would be fine with you. We have gotten an email question from a listener named Travis, who says the three objections to Wilson's work fall into categories of community involvement, the design of the statue, and the placement of the piece. Regarding the placement, Wilson himself acknowledged that when he designed, I think on the art of the matter, that when he designed the piece, he did not realize that the jail was a part of that space, and that if he could do it over again, he would have not have located it there. Comment was made earlier that people said they were okay with the piece if it was moved. Why wasn't it just moved to a different location? Who wants to take that one?
I would say, unfortunately, what we only have is the public record. Mm-hmm. And the public record is very kind of obscure on this, just going from what with the reporting, is that at one point Fred Wilson did offer to move it, but at that time the CICF said they were going to have a group of several community conversations to take kind of see what was going to happen. So I'm not sure if CICF ever, the Central Indiana Community Foundation and the Indianapolis Cultural Trail actually, to what extent they actually took that into account, because, and I just emphasize this, is because even though it was public art, it was actually, many of the discussions were occurring in very, very private settings, and that they're just not on the public record.
We are talking about art, race, and space here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. Your question, please.
Well, it wasn't so much a question, but someone was talking earlier about a generational divide on how these race relations should be depicted, and I wanted to relate tell an experience I had.
Sure.
I used to teach alongside John Scott at Xavier University in New Orleans, who's he was the MacArthur Genius Grant recipient, and he was horrified when Carol Walker also received a MacArthur, because his generation had been entirely devoted to creating these uplifting, positive images of the African-American community, and very sincere images. And her generation was making these sort of, ironic and relatively frightening and negative images about how, you know, the history of being an African American, and he saw that very clearly to him as tearing down and putting forth images that his generation had been trying to dispel, and he was very skeptical of the institutional acceptance of those images. And I just wanted to tell that story, and that becomes double troublesome when you make it public art. And I'll let you listen to the comments off the air.
Great. Thank you very much for the call, Tim. Well, I think I'll start with Molly, since he was responding to your recounting.
It sounds very similar to the conversations that I heard and was a part of. You know, generations older than me did say, you know, we're trying to get rid of images like that. Like, we lived, you know, racism. Like, we experienced so much of that that we do not, like, we don't need to be reminded. It's not that it's something we're ashamed of, but it's just, like, why do we have to see that again? Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of, you know, younger, you know, folks around town would just, we don't feel as closely connected to it, which is a good or bad thing. So it's just something that we feel like we don't see a lot of. And so we can celebrate it. We can talk about it. We're proud of it. We want to learn more about it. And so there was just that divide, kind of like a you don't get it, you know, type of attitude. You just don't get it. You didn't live it. And, you know, we don't need to see that again.
Well, and I guess, Will, did you want to jump in, or Will Marquez?
Yeah. Again, I think there's just something to say when you talk about, well, what should art do? What should, you know, and I think that art should not use the primary icon, you know, for public use, and the image of the slave is a commercialized, common now, you know, icon that I think has lived, you know, in some ways has lived its life, maybe especially in the public, you know, realm. When Mr. Savage was here and he described sort of how the image historically was always being framed in relationship to Abraham Lincoln, it always showed, you know, Abraham Lincoln sort of standing up and the slave, again, kneeling down. And these sort of images, you know, like them or not, and, you know, they get embedded into people's, you know, memory. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, speaking on behalf of all cultures, I think that we would all do ourselves a great deal of justice by, you know, looking forward at new images that portray us in a different type of environment.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Phil, or probably more of a comment, says, while this yet-to-exist sculpture is stirring up controversy, there's a silly little sculpture in Fountain Square depicting a pioneer nuclear family of white folk forging ahead with their gun and Bible. I'm white, and the thing makes me shake my head in disbelief over the simplistic and whitewashed view of the past. I want to see this sculpture you're talking about. Art should not be decided by committee. As Sarah Silverman said recently, you can't tell art what to do. Matupe, you're chuckling. So,
I've never heard Sarah Silverman associated with public art, so that's pretty.
Yeah.
But I do think what's interesting is I have not seen this art that Phil is alluding to, but I think what is interesting is what doesn't get, what is the art that we take for granted? And one of the kind of really, I think, generative discussions that have emerged during the controversy is that Indianapolis is very proud of itself as a city of monuments, but oftentimes the wars to which those monuments are dedicated get separated from them. So we see the Soldiers and Sailors Monument actually as a wonderful landscape or, you know, a background to pick family pictures as opposed to a commemoration for the war dead. And we also, I think, we have far more monuments than public art, too. And because, partly because of the way Fred Wilson works, but I think people started thinking, you know, is this, there was a lot of discussion, is this a monument or is this art? And would that make a difference in how we see it? So I think that was just a really interesting kind of debate about the landscape of the city.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Kelly. Says, art should be relevant and provocative. There are issues facing the African American community now that should be addressed. So we're beginning to hear some voices, obviously, here saying that it should spur something. I mean, it should stir things up. Will Marquez?
Yeah, I love that word relevant, and I wonder about monuments. I wonder about public space. I wonder if there's you know, women where public space is named after them. I wonder, you know, when representations of women will stop being just a nymph. Or, you know, something on a statue with bare-breasted, you know, why? You know, again, when do we get past that? And we're having a conversation here about African Americans, but it's in Latino communities, it's in women communities, it's in multiple communities who occupy the city and are taxpaying citizens.
Well, and I guess that's part of the other part of this discussion, I think, which is where Phil was going with his email. Is there's a lot of, you know, one particular strain or thread of American history, if we think of it as a fabric, that is very, very well represented, but others less so. Matupe,
we have multiple images of presidents and vice presidents, for example. That's not to demean them mm-hmm. or to say that they're not important. But the number of, say, real women who mm-hmm. are depicted, as opposed to, as Will said, goddesses or highly representational, I think is relatively rare. I think there are some new ones on a piece of public art on St. Clair Street.
Mm-hmm.
As far as African Americans, what people noted is that there is a depiction of a laborer on the west side of the government building. There's a depiction of Martin Luther King with Robert Kennedy. And then again, the freedmen.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is for all the other human beings that are represented, mm-hmm. Not to put too fine a point on them, but they're highly heroicized white men.
Mm-hmm.
And for that is and something that should cause all of us pause. And thinking about how do we want ourselves represented, to echo what Will has been saying.
I want to add a
please,
few to that list
this,
because
please.
I think, again, when we think about monuments, we think about these very, mm-hmm. you know, they're there forever, and they're made out of stone. But, you know, I do want to give a little shout for AJ, who on Senate Street, the whole block is named after him. It's a memorial.
Mm-hmm.
AJ Robinson or Mr. Curtis Terry, whose clock is at the East Plaza of the City Market. He was a watchmaker on Indiana mm-hmm. Avenue, and these pieces are relics, of course, not on Indiana Avenue. Exist outside that, but nonetheless, they're monuments. I want to make sure we pay attention to that.
Well, and to some degree, though, isn't it? I think we ought to talk about the fact that sometimes a provocative piece of art can, through the controversy, perform a healing function. I mean, the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington, D.C. comes to mind. I mean, there was bitter opposition to that, a really brutal, bitter opposition. And now, you know, it's become kind of a national touchstone. You can make an argument that it helped close some of the divides that war produced. Is that Molly Jeffers? Is that a...
Well, you just said art can, you know, heal. I think art can do a lot of things, but I don't know if art has to do these things or if it should. I think art should make people think and make people go learn and inspire you to do something. Whether that be, you know, inspire you to be angry and write a letter, you know, or inspire you to learn or grow. I don't think art has to or should, but it can.
We are talking about art, race, and space here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Paul, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. Your question, please.
Yes, well, it's a comment.
Okay.
Not
a problem. People want to talk about this today. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. Well, certainly, I would love to hear the comment of your panel on this, but it's just a kind of general statement about, you know, the city in our case, the city of Indianapolis as a city of people, and I would say that just in relation to other cities that might be more of a kind of intellectual culture
mm-hmm.
and how the city needs to kind of continually ask itself questions about how it wants to express itself as a culture. You know, in this case, talking about public art and further talking about it as art that is activist art in this case, in a sense. So I think that it's important for the public to kind of educate itself, I guess. I'm an architect, and I continually talk to people about, you know, designing buildings for them and to convince them or talk about their needs and how they're contributing something to their city and how they're contributing something that people are going to see and interact with. You know, how is that important and why is that important and how are we, you know, spending tremendous amounts of energy and money to fund projects, whether they be buildings or whether they be pieces of art. As much as we can have a good attitude about what we build and what we make and how we express ourselves, it's really up to the public. And I know that with Fred Wilson's piece, certainly people had their opinions about it. And I would certainly want to, I can commend Fred Wilson's piece insofar as it's caused this conversation, and maybe that was his intent, and maybe the art itself in Fred's mind was about having the conversation and not necessarily about making the art at all. I think that other cities like Detroit, for example, have done projects like the Heidelberg Project, where people sort of take action on their own, who aren't necessarily artists, but do a piece that is a kind of reaction to something that is a frustration or something that's not justice, or something that makes people charged and feel compelled to do something. And sometimes that something is making art.
Thank you very much for the call, Paul.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Well, we've also gotten a Facebook comment from a listener named Patricia that's on a similar theme. It says, the question is whether the piece was good for race relations in our community or not. After many public meetings, it was decided that it was not. And here you hear kind of the focus is really on the public piece of this, that to some degree the public was, because it's public space and that the public had a right to, in effect, exercise a kind of veto. Is that a fair position, Madupe?
I think it's always a tricky thing that anyone who's dealt with public art is looking at. With respect to Indianapolis, just recently, as far as the Fred Wilson piece goes, there were several forums, and there were hundreds of people that showed up, and we are in a city of millions. Mm-hmm. So any public art professional is very, very wary of saying that the public has spoken, because the people who are talking are passionate, and I can't emphasize enough how sophisticated and nuanced many of the critiques were. People knew what they were seeing and knew what they liked and didn't like. But it's very difficult. I mean, I think this is where democracy, we talk about, we're very want to enact democracy, but we don't often have votes on what goes up in our public space, whether it's parks or murals or anything else. We make commissions, and I'm really intrigued by other methods by which we can have art in the public space, but that seems to be one we're dealing with now.
Well, to some degree, Will Marquez.
I always remind people about sort of democracy and the competition, and that, you know, when the World Trade Center fell down, we all voted. I think it was the largest sort of public vote, and guess what? They did exactly what everybody did not want.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think we have to be careful on how we understand how public input is received, and I think the expectations of what can be delivered.
Do you guys think
Jeffers, please, yeah.
People didn't know how to respond or react to being involved in the process, or did we wait too late to invite people to the conversation, or what was the problem, I guess, with the public input? Was it too late, or are we just not used to that?
I think there's multiple things. I think on one hand, many people are keeping their body and souls together, and so they need to get groceries, they need to pick kids up. They might be thinking very passionately about it or having conversations on Facebook, but actually carving time out and going to a public space is not easy, and I really respect that. I think there's other discussions that we ought to have about how is art commissioned? Should we be thinking about situations in which artists create art with certain publics? That's a completely different model than what many times, and it happens in many places. So there's lots of things out there.
And that sounds like that would be another show at some point, because we are at the end of this one. I would like to thank you all for joining me and providing us with a very lively hour of discussion. We will be back next week when we will be talking about schools, education, and solving American Indiana's education challenges. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.